How to recover? It's a question I sometimes ask myself throughout my physical journey, because one of the things that I've realized, especially as I've gotten older, is that you can't treat your body like a rubber band without giving that rubber band a rest. If you pull on a rubber band too much, that rubber band is going to snap and it's going to break. And oftentimes a lot of our muscles are like that. There's little micro tears that develop and you can end up injured or seriously hurt. As you get older, that recovery process can also become a little bit slower. But recovery is kind of this multifaceted thing to think about, because you have to work through recovery in many different ways. And the things that contribute to your recovery doesn't just have to do with the exercises that you do afterwards. If you're injured, it's not just about putting the bandage over and hoping that it magically gets better. It's about putting in the work to make yourself stronger afterwards. It's about eating the right foods that are going to promote better and faster recovery. It's about making sure that your recovery is active and not passive. Today, I'm talking to my friend, Dr. Ryan Cullen. Ryan is a physical therapist and a co-founder at Catalyze Performance. And I've known Ryan since our days in college, and it's been really cool to see someone go from ambitious kid who talks about one day becoming a physical therapist to actually getting to do that thing and doing a pretty bang up job while doing it. I follow Ryan on social media, and I've incorporated so many of the things that he puts out there in terms of my personal daily habits. When something's feeling a little sore or something's feeling a bit tight, I often refer to videos that Ryan has put out there, and quite frankly, I feel amazing. And I think you might pick up some great things today in terms of how you can best optimize your performance, both in your daily life and in your exercise and fitness routine, through recovery and through optimizing and making your recovery the best that it can be. I'm Rich Sabata, the founder and editor of BodegaBody.com, and this is the Bodega Body Podcast.
Yo, smoking on top shelf Guido, and it's all over my hands like Cheetos. All she wanna do is dance in tight speedos, relax in a mansion like the Migos. I can't even sell the shit that I smoke. This shit cause bands like the Beatles. And we watch movies like it's Regal, then go cash out on seafood, send her home with a quarter ounce of diesel. Girl, that boy don't even feed you. Yeah, he's out, he's spreading like the measles. I feel like these niggas want competition with me, and I only compete with myself. This for the niggas who stuck to the mission with me. I got Dev here up in the kitchen with me, got the oven on 450. I got an ounce of Gorilla Glue, I'ma smoke that in the day, I need more sticky. These niggas wish they could do what I do, but they can't, so instead they want war with me. I hit this bitch from the back, it was lovely, I might bring that pussy on tour with me. I'm from a block where you gotta look before you step, if you don't, you get killed here. Half of my niggas is blazing for PD, the other half rolling like wheelchairs. They call me David, I speak from the heart, I was born in the...
So, today with me, I've got a very special friend. I've known this guy for 8 years now, which is kind of weird to say out loud. He's a doctor of physical therapy, an orthopedic clinical specialist, and a co-founder at Catalyze Performance, Dr. Ryan Cullen. It's good to see you, man.
Oh, man. Good to be here. I'm glad we got the chance to chat here.
I have to say, after knowing you since college, it's really good to call you Dr. Ryan Cullen.
it was a long time coming with the whole doctor thing for a while, but the most recent one with the clinical specialist was definitely somehow a lot harder than grad school. So
yeah, well, we'll get into all that. But how are you doing? How have you been holding up over the last number of months? I know it's funny. It's probably the most overstated thing that we're like in unprecedented times for everyone. But how have you been holding up?
All right, man. In terms of myself, I'm down in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we definitely were impacted with a bigger city by the whole COVID mess. But You know, it's one of those things where as a healthcare professional, we want to make sure we take the right steps along the way. And so business definitely slowed down for a bit and then gave me some time to work on different personal stuff with the Catalyze brand and everything that we're launching. But, you know, it's been one of those things where I'm lucky to be surrounded by good people. And I think that's huge in a situation like that where you have some uncertainty. You know, I in the clinic was, you know, working to start the year and then went on furlough for a little bit just because of volume issues at the clinic. And my company had to actually do that with several employees. And then, you know, we've been able to bring people back slowly and are getting back to full speed now, which is good.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. It's what you're saying about it's the people you keep around. That's the most important, because I was like, essentially, hunkering down with my girlfriend when she was still living in Baltimore. And I'm like, I would be going nuts if, you know, if she wasn't there. And like, one of the things I realized, I was texting my family a whole lot more than I probably would have normally. Yep. So, I've been noticing that it's just like, one, because I'm doing this podcast now, I get the chance to like reconnect with people that I've wanted to chat with for a while, but also like living digitally has made it sort of a lot easier to do that with everyone. Because I think it's, you have to like be a little bit more conscious about it. So I want to start off by talking a little bit about you. You know, ever since I've known you, since our college days, you've always been this like super active guy and you've always been in great shape. I wasn't always in good shape. But so like, you know, I want to know a little bit about, you know, for starters, what your relationship with fitness has been, how do you think that's changed over time? And, you know, what's your thoughts on
it? So I think, you know, that's, it's a long road when it comes to fitness. And, you know, I give people so much credit, for whatever road they take with fitness, especially, you know, the road that you took was amazing. And I loved watching your journey along the way. You know, personally, my stuff with fitness started in high school, just wanted to get stronger for sports. You know, was a high school athlete and ultimately just wanted to, you know, get bigger, faster, stronger. And
what did you play?
I played volleyball, hockey, and baseball. Stopped baseball partway through high school, but played volleyball and hockey in high school, and then went on to play a little bit of volleyball in college. And so it was one of those things where I just wanted to hit that next level of performance and fell in love with the process of working out early on. You know, being able to see some of those results translate to the field or the court, you know, whatever, or I guess the rink, whatever sport we were doing. And, you know, also was able to see how the body worked, and I was very into science and whatnot. So it definitely was a nice segue for me, you know, to also look into it for a career as well.
Yeah. So when was there anything particularly about physical therapy that drew you to it? Because I think a lot of the guys that we knew in college, you know, they were high school athletes, but they might not have necessarily gone down a physical therapy route. I know a couple people have went into the sports management route. So what is it about physical therapy that drew you to it?
So, you know, what's funny is that I was drawn to physical therapy because I was an injured athlete. So I, in high school, had various injuries, some more severe than others, nothing, you know, terrible, nothing like a ACL injury or anything like that. But my biggest one was in hockey, where I ended up, you know, fracturing the side of my kneecap a little bit. And so it wasn't anything, you know, significant where I couldn't play, but the doctor basically told me, he's like, if you can play through it, you can play on it. And being a high school athlete, my junior year of college, you know, I was captain of the team. I'm like, I'm not sitting out. So I luckily had a friend whose father was a PT and would let me come in before games and, you know, get treatment, being able to play through games and whatnot. So I was exposed to physical therapy that way. Looking back on it, that's not the way to heal an injury per se, but, you know, gave me that exposure to that field and seeing how medicine translated to movement and, for me, athletics, but also just like health in general, and seeing how, you know, there was an opposite side, or not opposite side, but a part before the weight room where maybe you could develop, you know, habits and certain movement patterns that would help you once you got more into that performance realm of training.
Got it. Okay. So you made me think of something funny, but like, are there things now that you think about that you are a medical professional that like random advice that you would hear growing up that you're like, I would never follow that now. Like I would never, that's really dumb or a poor idea.
Oh, absolutely. I say it all the time now, even, you know, training right now with my own programming, I look back at even my times in grad school and even undergrad, yeah. And especially in high school, where I look back and look at my training, I'm like, wow, I was training like an absolute idiot. I don't know how I didn't get injured more often because I thought that I knew what I was doing and really, realistically, I had not a clue. And really just tried to do as many things as I could, as fast as I could, and hope for the best. And now looking back on it with the knowledge that, you know, gained over the years and the repetitions that I've had, that's not always the best way to go about it. And there's different methods to get those better results, you know, for different people.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. For anyone that follows you on Instagram, I think they know that you're a big fan of CrossFit. I think we've talked about it a couple times before. How did you get into the CrossFit world?
Yeah. So in regards to, you know, CrossFit, I initially started training with that style and methodology in graduate school. So I kind of touched along all the different ways of, or methods of fitness, I guess you could say, where, you know, initially right off the bat, when I was training in high school, probably did a little bit more of the isolation, quote unquote, bodybuilding work, whatever you want to call it, where you're focusing on individual muscle groups. And then in graduate school, my first year did a little bit of powerlifting stuff, nothing competitive, but just followed that style of programming. And then, you know, I set a goal for myself with powerlifting. I wanted to hit a certain weights across a few different lifts, which are the main lifts for powerlifting. And, you know, I hit those weights and then I sat there and I'm like, okay, I hit it. What's my next step? What do I want to do? And for me, I didn't want to keep going with powerlifting. I was finishing up a cycle. And when I hit my last lift, it was either I was going to hit it or I was going to get injured. And so, and nothing is powerlifting. Powerlifting is fantastic. And I think if you do it right, there's great things there. But for me, I was totally fried and needed a different outlet. Mm. And one of my classmates in graduate school had started training at a CrossFit gym. So he got us a couple of weeks free and went to go check it out. Mm. And I fell in love with the nature of CrossFit right off the bat, just given my personality because of the, for me, it was the competitive community atmosphere that really got me.
That's what I hear about it a lot.
And so I think there's many different stigmas obviously surrounding CrossFit, you know, with injury, with, you know, people who are maybe stuck up with CrossFit, you know, whatever the stigma is. But I think it's more the individual gym. And so the individual community that surrounds it. Are there CrossFit gyms that are not great? Absolutely. As with anything, if you find the right atmosphere where you can thrive and you can succeed, you're really going to see positive results there. And so I was lucky to step into a gym that was in a good atmosphere, but also I was training with five or six of my closest buddies from grad school, which certainly helped along the way.
Definitely. Definitely. One of the things I hear a lot about CrossFit beyond the community is that it's really, really tough on the body. Talking from my own personal experience, I did this CrossFit program, I want to say like 7-8 weeks. I was in a CrossFit gym and I actually ended up getting, I won't say hurt because it wasn't like a legitimate injury, but there were a couple weeks when I stopped going, where I like really felt some tightness and pain in my hips in a way that I'd never felt before in my life. And like at that point I had been lifting for a couple years. At that point I'd already gotten myself into pretty decent shape and I was sort of at the peak of where I would say is my athletic ability. So I wanted to try the CrossFit thing to like, you know, up that challenge for myself. And so I ended up a little bit discouraged from that process because I was like, wait a second, like there's something here. I don't know if it's the people that I'm working with. I don't know what it is, but I don't necessarily have this trust in it that I had before.
And, you know, I think it's awesome to see people go through different you know, transitions of fitness. Cause I feel like you start in one place and then you get a little bored there. You want to go somewhere else. You want to go try something different. And you know, that's why there are so many different areas of fitness that you can go towards. And there's not just one. So, you know, whatever works for you is good. But in regards to the whole idea of like CrossFit damaging your joints and whatnot, it's something where you have to think, I think about it more from a stimulus perspective. So if you take any method of fitness and ask your body to do it, you know, you're going to be sore right off the bat, especially if you haven't subjected your body to that kind of intensity or that kind of stress. So for CrossFit, CrossFit has a lot of different movements that are typically performed at high intensity, but also has different mechanisms where sometimes you're lifting heavier and going slower. Sometimes you're working on form. Sometimes you're working on all these different things. And that's where, you know, you get, it's called CrossFit. So, you know, you're encompassing every aspect of fitness supposedly. And so, especially for people who are coming from a different area and go in and try CrossFit, if you're at a gym that coaches you through those beginning stages and allows you to get into those positions and feel comfortable in those positions, a lot of times taking that time to do that allows you to be more successful. Whereas sometimes when you are starting right off the bat, your body takes time to adapt. And you know, in regards to how it happens, you know, there's a whole scientific thing you can go into, but basically your body requires a lot of time to adjust and ultimately improve your capacity to handle different things. And so CrossFit, especially with some of the different movements, like, so, I mean, even the clean or some of the squats, if you're getting down deep into a squat and you haven't been there before and you're not comfortable down there, it's not going to feel great the first couple of times you do it, especially if you haven't trained that mobility.
I think guys are a little bit more guilty of this than girls.
Myself included, by the way, right? So when I first started training, my movements looked absolutely insane. Like I wish I took a video of it because I had no idea what I was doing. I hadn't done this before. Right. And so I still remember after the first class, I could hardly get out of bed the next day. I could hardly even move because I, for the warm up, decided to go full speed and being just being a clown, and it did not turn out so well. And so I ended up sticking with it. And, you know, I had the beauty of also having a little bit of a physical therapy, you know, knowledge building along there, which is definitely helpful. But, you know, for certain people, certain movements aren't going to be great. And that's where a really good coach is going to come in, whether it's CrossFit, whether it's yoga, whether it's Pilates, anything like that, any method where you are trying to learn a new development. So for, you know, for you, you've been able to try all these different things. I mean, that's awesome. And you, I feel like, have been able to, you know, share with your community and your followers that journey and how you've done that along the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think one of the things I've learned along the years is that, like, you got to put your ego to the side, is that you have to be like, you can't care about what the person next to you is doing. You can't care about whatever someone else looks like. You have to focus on competing with yourself and trying to get better for yourself every sort of step along the way, because the version of me today is not the version of me who was 334 pounds, you know, 3 years ago. And the things I can do now is not the things that guy could do. And so it's building that sort of callus, if you will, to a lot of things. And I'll say that, like, even if you are trained and you've been training yourself, you can still feel some soreness if you take a break.
Absolutely.
Like I've been taking a little bit of a rest period because I've got a little bit of an injury now, and I was been doing a lot of yoga this week. And I've noticed that I've been sore in my shoulders, and I'm like, what? Like, I've never felt sore from something as low impact as yoga, but, like, I was exuding myself in a way that my body hadn't been used to for a couple of weeks. I definitely feel you with that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, like you just said, your body's sore from trying something that you haven't done before. And it's like, okay, yeah. You know, in the PT clinic, you know, whenever we're doing something, we tell people it's going to take weeks to adapt, you know, minimum weeks. And a lot of times it's even longer than that, right? Yeah. So to build initial strength takes 4 to 6 weeks. So if we're just experiencing a new position and then expect our body to adapt that quickly. It doesn't happen that way. And that's where, you know, we want things instantly, and myself included. Like I said, I've been there, done that. I went to a Pilates class, you know, last year, and my hips were screaming at me, right? I'm doing front squats. I'm doing all sorts of CrossFit movements all the time. And I go and do a Pilates class and get my abs, my butt kicked, you know, it was insane. Yeah. And so, like you said, it's something where I think it's important to have those different experiences to allow your body to feel a different kind of stress than what you're used to, but also understand where your body's limits are. And that's going to be different for everybody along the way.
Mm. Yeah, no, definitely, man. You started talking a little bit about some of the conversations that you have with people now that you're a physical therapist. So, you know, it'd be great to hear about how some of the ways that you work with people now, like what are some common things that you help people with, both in your regular practice and with your business now with Catalyze?
Yeah. So in the clinic, I see everything from neck and jaw pain, headaches to shoulder pain, you know, hip pain, post-surgical all the way down, you know, pretty much head to toe. I've seen everything. If you've had the injury, I've seen it. And you know, helps get it back or referred to somebody who, if it needed to be, you know, bumped up the chain towards a surgeon or something like that. I definitely have done that before, but you know, it's one of those things where the more that I've been in the clinic, the more that I realize that sometimes injuries can be solved a lot of the times by adjusting just a couple different things with people's training. So especially right off the bat, if we are looking at a shoulder injury, a ton of people have, you know, shoulders that are bugging them. Oh, I just have a bad shoulder, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you're 32. You shouldn't have a bad shoulder. Like your shoulder didn't misbehave. Mm. Like it's not bad. Yeah. It's one of those things where, okay, what did you do that led to that point? Oh, well, I did 150 pull-ups and what was the last time you did a pull-up? Mm. Oh, well, 3 months ago. Well, I know why your shoulder hurts, right? So it's something where if we are looking at your training intensity, if we're looking at what you're doing for training, seeing if there's anything that we're neglecting along the way, if we address those deficits and then build up your whole system, right? So a lot of times it's not just one area. It's not just your shoulder. It can be your neck might be involved. Your upper back might be involved. Maybe there's a coordination issue. Maybe there is something where the stability, you know, control through your shoulder is lacking. If we look at all those different facets and work to clear that up, and then also look at your whole system where say you are, you know, just crushing it at work, but you are pulling long days and then you're sitting in front of your TV for 2 hours a night and eating Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A is great. Don't get me wrong. It's delicious. But you're also not giving your body the fuel that it needs to get better, and then surviving on 4 to 5 hours of sleep, your recovery is going to be pretty down the tube. And so when we also have an injury on top of that, if we can get everything rolling in a positive direction where we're starting to address a little bit of nutrition, a little bit of recovery and whatnot along the way, a lot of injuries clear up, man. A lot of things just start to dissipate because you're allowing your body to recover, giving it the fuel to do so.
Yeah, man, I've started to realize that food, and it took me again a little while to realize, is that food oftentimes can help so much of the recovery portion. Absolutely. And the things that you're putting in the body, the quality of the things that you're putting in the body. It's not just about calories in, calories out. It's, you know, making sure that those foods are, you know, really optimizing your performance. And not only that, optimizing your recovery, optimizing how you sleep. I realized that, like, once I changed my diet and I started eating more plants, from going from zero plants to a lot more plants, and now I'm fully plant-based, like, my recovery has gone amazing. And I've realized that a lot of the things that used to hurt me don't necessarily hurt me as much. And I won't get into the whole plant-based thing, but, like, in general, that's some of the things that people make that argument for.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you. They say that you can't out-train a bad diet, right? So people are always looking for, and this is society in general, is a lot of times we're looking for that 1% to get you, you know, to the next level that, you know, you see your elite athletes using on Instagram or on TV and whatnot. And then we take a look and we say, okay, we're looking for that supplement, but where's your base? We need that base first. We need, you know, your diet, your sleep. If we dial those in, you'd be amazed what happens, right? And so that, then you start to get stronger. Then you start to, you know, you start to feel better. You start to sleep better. Your relationships improve, your performance at work improves. And so that's where, especially in the clinic, I'll ask questions sometimes to clients and be like, well, my shoulder hurts. I'm like, well, yeah, that's great. I can rehab your shoulder. That's not a problem. Like, that's cool. Well, give me the right amount of time and we can make that happen.
Yeah.
But if we don't address these other things, we're going to be having the same conversation in 6 months. And ultimately, as a PT, I'm not doing my job if I don't go ahead and say, hey, this is what's going on here. And if you're open to it, let's have that conversation a little bit deeper.
Mm. So you bring up a really great point. And speaking about this through my personal experience now with my injury, what are some of the signs that people can look for between what's regular soreness versus what's a potential injury? Because I'll say for myself, I used to do a lot of jump rope, especially when I was a lot bigger, and I started getting into jumping rope a whole lot more, and I started feeling a lot of soreness in my feet. Because I went from zero to jumping rope like for 20 minutes a day. And that's a lot of impact when you're 300 plus pounds. But now I have plantar fasciitis. And I'm like, okay, I did something wrong, but I clearly just thought that it was just soreness. So what are some things that, for the person who might not be as aware of their body, what are some things that they can look out for?
I think that's the key right there. What you said at the end is that the awareness of your body. And that's something that I have to remind myself of all the time, is that, you know, everything that people are presenting with, a lot of times it's their first experience with it. And it's things that, you know, we see all the time in the clinic. Okay, your foot hurts. I've seen 200 people, you know, 500 people with foot pain and know exactly what needs to happen. Everybody else is their first experience with it. And so in regards to, you know, what you feel, I always describe it as, okay, you've done a workout where your feet have been sore, your calves have been sore, whatever, you're fatigued. Maybe a little bit of joint soreness, you know, stiff a little bit, walk around the next day, starts to clear up. Okay, cool. You know, does that soreness start to linger more? Does it start to become, you know, a little bit more of like that deep ache, or are we starting to get maybe a few twinges here and there that, and that's where, if we can capture people at that area where we're getting, hey, this was a little achy for 30 minutes this morning and then it went away and, oh, cool, it's all better. I'm going to go do the same thing again. I'm going to go jump rope, whatever, for 20 minutes again, and then not address that little warning sign that your body gave you where it's like, okay, I woke up and my heel was sore in the shower for like 10 minutes and I had to roll it out and do these different things. And then it feels a little bit better. So we ignore it. It's human nature. If it's not there, then we're not going to pay attention to it. So I think the difference is that if it lingers and if it feels off a little bit from your exercise soreness, your good soreness that you and I are now kind of addicted to, right? We love that, that exercise soreness. If we can recognize that, and it takes practice, don't get me wrong. You know, my ability to recognize it in my own body is only because I went through several different, you know, little tweaks here and there. I'm just lucky enough to have a exercise and physical therapy background to understand what's going on. The more that people can practice stuff and then seek assistance or help right off the bat. Right. So I have people all the time shoot me texts. Hey, my knee's bugging me. What should I do for it? And usually my first question is, I don't have any cookie cutter exercises. Everything's individualized, but there are certain things that you can oftentimes do that help along the way.
Right. I think one of the things, and I was actually having another conversation with someone about this earlier today, part of the way we think about medicine here in the U.S. Is that you do it after you're hurt. You do it after something's bothering you. What are some ways that you can work with people as a form of preventative care in some ways that people might not necessarily think about a physical therapist at first.
Yeah, so I actually had somebody come in maybe a month or 2 months ago, and they came in and told me, hey, nothing hurts right now. I'm totally fine right now. But my upper back hurts really bad twice a year, and I don't know why. And, you know, it's the whole, his back went out. And so I said, okay, awesome. I love it. You're coming in and it doesn't hurt. You just made my job a whole lot easier. And it's something where if people come in and want to improve their health or improve their performance, and performance, I mean, as a catch-all term, you know, improve your vitality, improve your resilience, whatever term you want to use with it. From my company, Catalyze Performance, we use performance because we think that you can improve your performance in any aspect of life, in your work, relationships, you know, physical, whatever it is. But if you were to make something stronger before it becomes weak, and this is the case with anything in life, it's going to be more resilient, and it's going to take more to then go ahead and create an insult or injury to whatever that is. So if it's the human body, if it's your, you know, personal resilience with different situations. And I think that's something that, you know, I've realized the last couple of years, especially doing a little bit more reading and, you know, having the time to kind of sit down and go through different conflict and things like that, where it's like, okay, that's really important. And the more that you can work on yourself as well, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, man, totally. I think one of the things that I've realized keeps coming up in these conversations that I have with people is the, not only the physical resilience that it takes oftentimes, but it's the mental, and how they're all tied together and how they're all sort of this one big thing. And, they're a lot more linked in ways that people don't necessarily think of off the bat.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a huge link between it. And now a lot of PTs are starting to have that conversation, and I guess I shouldn't isolate that to PTs, you know, health professionals or anybody in the fitness space in general, having that conversation of the larger body and how it interacts, because I don't think we knew that a whole lot 10 or 15 years ago. It wasn't as studied, and now they're really starting to dive into it more. And it's fascinating, honestly, to be able to use some of that and see it actually produce some pretty remarkable results. And I'm sure you could even speak more to, you know, the impact of, you know, being able to feel better, and then your relationships improve, your, you know, performance in your professional career improves, and then your clarity of thinking probably even.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you, man, 100%, like I've written about this before, but one of the things that I tell people, the greatest thing that has ever happened to my career, is my weight loss journey. And not because people that I work with care about what size I am, because they don't care, right? Like I do my job and that's what's important. But what I've realized is that the mental clarity that I started approaching my job with, the stress that I no longer had, those were the things that had the biggest impacts on my career. And they were able to help me work through things in ways that I had never sort of thought of before. And in my personal life too, like the way I approach personal relationships with my family, my girlfriend, you know, whoever, is not the same way that I did before. So it's definitely one of those things where you hear people talking about it from this perspective, and it sounds lofty and it sounds sort of pie in the sky, but there is, you know, obviously it's not perfect, but there is clarity that you do gain.
Absolutely. And I think too, it's something where there's something to be said for putting those principles into practice. You know, it's easy to say, oh, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to create this daily habit. And then you go about your day, you know, life is busy, whatever, you hit traffic on the way home from work, you don't have time, and you don't have time to work on yourself and have your own self time, whatever that is. Yeah. And if you're able to put some of those things into practice and then have the chance to notice the results, it's usually pretty impressive. And it's not always, maybe you don't always notice it yourself, but the people around you oftentimes will, you know, whether or not they tell you, notice that, you know, you're making changes for the positive.
Yeah, definitely. So part of the reason that I founded the website and the blog, and part of what people follow me for is general tips around like how you can go on this journey without spending a lot of money. And I associate your services with money, sir. And as people might not always necessarily be able to afford a physical therapist. That's kind of just like the reality of things. So obviously nothing will ever replace, you know, the time and the personalized care that a physical therapist or a doctor mm-hmm. would. But if there are any resources that people can find online, are there any that you would recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a good amount of resources online where if you take the time to look at stuff, to read through stuff, there's some pretty darn good stuff out there. You know, personally, I look more into some of the physical therapy resources just because that's the field that I'm in. There's plenty of personal trainers putting out great stuff. There's plenty of, you know, health coaches putting out great stuff. You know, for myself personally, I'll look towards some of the stuff that, you know, the prehab guys are doing out in California. They're a online physical therapy / performance group who are just crushing it out there. They have lots of online resources. I'll look towards I'm really closely tied in with the Institute of Clinical Excellence, who's putting out incredible stuff and have some of the best PTs in the country as a part of their team. Mm. So they are consistently putting out content where they're working to improve, you know, people's lives. They're not, you know, they'll get your shoulder pain better, but it's like, okay, if we're going to get your shoulder pain better, you know, let's get you healthier. Let's get you moving better and you know, portraying that right message. And so I'll follow a lot of their stuff too. I have a buddy here in Charlotte as well, who's a personal trainer, Ashton Baylor. He runs Mind Muscle Hustle. And so he puts out a ton of content as well, where he's focusing on more than just fitness. And so there are so many online resources that you can reach out to. And that's the key, is that you want to be able to find those positive ones. And, you know, we're trying to put out some good online resources and have it be available to people and to be able to answer some of those questions. Cause if I can, you know, keep you healthy without you having to come to see me, cool. I'm all about that. You know, what our clinic doors are going to be, you know, moving either way. If until everybody is healthy and injury free, which is probably not going to happen, I'm totally down with putting out some good stuff there.
Yeah, man. And I will say, you actually do put out some really good stuff. I was doing, one of the movements that you had shown on your Instagram, I think it was a couple months ago, where you put like your elbows on like the seat of a hard chair and you're like bending forward to help with the stretching of the thoracic spine. Did I butcher that? Okay. I'm learning. So I was actually doing some of that because I was feeling a little bit tight back there. So I was like, oh, this is really good. This is like very helpful. Go Colin.
See, and that's the thing, man, is that it's simple stuff like that, that if you, when those little, you know, things that feel a little achy or a little sore afterwards, after your workout, after whatever, maybe it's your work day, maybe it's your commute, maybe it's not even a workout, you know, picking a couple things, you know, having somebody that you trust and using their content. You know, a lot of people who are in the space are putting out, you know, information, using some of that and then trying it out and seeing, oh, huh, that feels pretty good. Okay, I'm going to make that a part of my routine for a couple of weeks. Or, wow, that feels terrible. I'm not going to do that one. That one's not right for me. You know, it's one of those things where if you don't have some of the resources to go see a professional, then you're going to go through a little bit of trial and error, and that's fine. You know, that's how I learned. That's honestly, you know, that's
how I learned.
Right. And I think there's a lot of value to that, honestly, in learning along the way. If you have the financial means, I guess you can pay somebody to skip some of those errors. But if not, then I think there's nothing wrong with that, man. That there's plenty of ways where you can move and positively impact your body and feel better along the way. Mm.
Definitely. So thinking about injury and coming back from injury, I'm asking for myself, actually. Yep. And how do you, how do you know how to slowly come back into things, especially if you're not necessarily working with someone, right? Like, I've got my plantar fasciitis. I'm going to go see my podiatrist. He's giving me the shots. And, like, beyond that, it's nothing, no other kind of relationship there. He's not telling me, yeah, go work out, don't work out. He's getting paid regardless, right, just to give me the shot. So how do people like me ease into things in problem areas and injury areas?
So one of the guys through the Institute of Clinical Excellence, Alan Fredendahl, and then, you know, Jeff Moore, their group really promotes this thing called the symptom behavior model. And so it's a large, you know, physical therapy concept, but it's can be applied to very simply to everyday things. So for you getting back from plantar fasciitis, right? Say your pain level is greatly reduced. Okay, cool. Yeah. But none of the muscles or issue that actually, you know, led to that problem have been addressed so far. So say you need to work on your foot strength or your calf strength, right? Mm-hmm. You should start moving that muscle first off, you know, working that muscle, doing some stuff that feels decent and reasonable, maybe a little bit sore, because realistically it's probably going to be a little sore. And okay, pause, see how it feels. Oh, wow, that wasn't too bad. Okay, cool. Let's do a few more. And then, you know, say you do 20 minutes of calf or ankle related movement the first day. See how you feel later that night. Okay. Are you already sore? Or do you feel pretty good, like you didn't do anything? Could you do them again? Okay. But you're still going to wait to see what your response is the next day. Okay. You wake up the next day and it feels fantastic. Awesome. You probably didn't hit a high enough intensity, because if you're recovering from an injury and you're okay with hitting this, you know, progression, personally, I've pushed my rehab a little bit faster, but that's, you know, I have the luxury of the knowledge base there. But if you don't, then okay. Is it a little sore? Okay, maybe back down slightly. Say you did 25 reps per set. Okay, do 20. Mm-hmm. See how it feels the next day. And go based off of that, and you'll find that sweet spot where the pain rating scale, which personally I can't stand, but you know, your pain's zero.
I was thinking about the smiley faces.
Your pain 0 to 10, whatever it is. I half the time don't even ask anymore, because I can see a patient walk in and know generally where on that scale they are. So and a lot of times they'll tell me, they'll be like, you already know what I'm at. I'm like, well, you're not wrong. But the important part is that you want to make yourself a little bit sore and then recover. Mm-hmm. And you should be able to recover. If it takes you more than a day to recover, you probably went a little bit too hard. So, you know, all those people who are hitting, you know, heavy squats and they can't walk for 4 days and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And I, like I said, been there, done that. It's probably a little bit too much. And so if you're okay with that, if you're okay with hitting that intensity, all right, but recognize that it was probably a little bit too much for your body. So for you, if you were to be able to do some of those calf movements, whatever, hitting some of the slow and controlled reps, and that's a big thing as well right off the bat, is mastering that control again. Because with an injury, I'm sure you've noticed your control through that joint is reduced.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's funny because it's such a minor injury, you know, thankfully, not, you know, knock on wood. And right now that I have, that, like, for me, it's, I can walk normally. I don't necessarily feel pain all the time. So for me, some of the things I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, like sometimes when I go down to like do push-ups, it feels a little sore. So I'm like, maybe I should like not put as much weight on that foot as I think I could, and, you know, keep just doing some of those exercises. So I've been trying to gauge some of that stuff on my own so far. I got this little like chart that my doctor gave me. He's like, you know, just step your toes up on top of a book a couple times a day. And I'm like, okay, I'll try to do that.
Yeah. And
should I stop paying my doctor?
See, your doctor's doing his job, right? Your doctor's job is to provide you with the intervention that they have. For them, it's a shot. You know, for a rehab professional, for me, I'd be giving you, you know, I'd be assessing your movement and seeing where those deficits are and addressing those deficits. But for you, it's going to be figuring out what movements are too hard for you. what movements are too easy for you. Because I mean, for you, if you're able to walk, you know, doing the classic ankle alphabet is garbage. It's, you know, not any good for you because it's too easy. Because you can also underdose exercise. If you underdose it, then you're wasting your time. Whereas if you are overdosing it, then you're pushing it too far and you're at risk for injury. You want to hit that sweet spot where you're a little sore and then recover and make sure that you hit your strength and your mobility. And that's the biggest thing, is that you want to make sure that you're hitting both of those realms. And that's where finding some of those free online resources you could do. You just sometimes need to know where to look, for sure, which can be the tricky part too.
I might ask you some personal questions afterward.
Yeah,
recording.
Yeah, no worries.
So I you know, obviously working in corporate America, one of the common complaints I hear from people, and you know, we'll get to some questions that I got from social media, at Rich Sabata on Instagram and Twitter, by the way.
There you go. Give him a shout out. Some of the people.
Some of the common things I hear are things like tightness in your hips and your lower back. Especially, I'll say, since the, you know, since COVID became this thing and we're a lot more sedentary than we definitely were before, people sitting all day. Are there anything, any kind of guidance that you can give people to work through some of that and to prevent that, some of that soreness, especially in the middle of the workday?
Yeah. So my first thing is to move, honestly. And it sounds simple, but it's one of those things where if you are sitting all day, you need to move. You know, I sit in a stool at work for 20 minutes and I can hardly even sit because I need to go. And granted, I don't sit still well. That's why I'm a physical therapist. That's why I don't have a desk job. But it's something where if you sit in one position for 8 hours, I don't care who you are, you're going to be sore. And if you do that for 40 hours a week, well, if you're not stiff, I'm shocked, because you need, your body's designed to move. Your body's designed to do different things. And so along the way, I'll have, and I have a ton of patients and clients who work in corporate America who have desk jobs. In fact, that's a lot of my folks. And so a lot of times it's introducing some movements, you know, working on some movement through your spine, working on some movement through your shoulders, you know, working on those muscles. And we can point towards some, people can look on some videos on social media and whatnot. We've put some of them up there, but it's something where you can easily pull up something, watch a video, take a, we'll sometimes call it a exercise snack or a movement snack, whatever you want to call it, set a timer on your iPhone. I don't care what it is, but let your body move, right? If you're working at a desk, odds are you can take a minute, maybe 30 seconds, whatever. If you have 5 minutes, cool. And a couple times during the day, you know, I'm sure you've gone to your fridge 6 times and looked at it and closed it again. Instead of doing that once, let's do a few different movements, find a trainer or PT's, you know, website that you trust and try them out. And with that, a lot of times that movement, if it is tightness, it can help. I oftentimes see tightness also present as weakness, or weakness present as tightness. Sorry, that was backwards. Weakness present as tightness, because people all the time will come in and say, oh, I have tight hips. I'm like, okay, well, let's check. And unless you're checking to see what is actually going on, you know, going for an exercise to fix that problem that it feels like you have might not actually be addressing what's going on.
Interesting. Okay. Would have never
thought that about makes that. Sense. So I guess the biggest example I can give there, and it's not sedentary folks at a job, is I have tons of runners who come to see me and say that their hips are tight. And the first thing I do, well, not the first, depending on their history, but one of the things that I do is assess their hip mobility and see if their hips are tight, because there's ways to check. And more often than not, their hip mobility is just fine. Their hip, you know, range of motion is all there, but they are stretching like crazy and running, neither of which work on your control through your hips. And I'm smiling because my girlfriend's smiling over here because she runs a lot. But basically, you know, it's one of those things where if we're lacking one of those facets of movement, you then can have an issue and feel like it's something else going on, which is, again, the tricky part.
Yeah, got it. Okay. That definitely makes sense. I think that one of the things I discovered somewhat early on was that your body's a lot more connected than you realize. And like sometimes something like lower back pain can be tied to like super tight hamstrings. And I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that like the thing that's right, not right next to it. Like, yeah. So that's definitely something, something useful to keep in mind. You ready for some questions that I got on social
media?
Let's
hit it, man. I'll do what I can.
So, got a friend down in LA, Michelle. She works a job where she sits a lot. She's been wrestling with some issues for a while. She's mentioned, especially as she's been aging a little bit. She actually has been to a physical therapist before, and partially because she has a partially torn meniscus and early onset osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. So a very specific issue with this person. But she has problems with her IT band and a couple of imbalances. She thinks some of that comes from a lot of the cycling that she does, and she tries to use yoga and some things to work through some of that. But if there's any kind of general advice that you have, be helpful.
Yeah, so I would say, and what was your name again?
Michelle.
Michelle. So I would tell, you know, Michelle that as she's aging, you know, for me, age is just a number. You know, I'll have people go ahead and do some pretty cool things regardless of their age, but it's something where, you know, the torn meniscus, osteoarthritis, obviously you're going to see that with imaging sometimes. I take it with a grain of salt, you know, with the stuff in the clinic, I'm looking more at how she can move, what she actually feels. And if that, you know, torn meniscus is actually causing her any true problems, or if it's more, you know, like you said, muscle imbalances or, you know, lack of control through her knee. So I would tell her to start and say, look at her, what she can do with her leg. Okay. Can you straighten it all the way out? Can you bend it? Okay. If you can do those two things and your range of motion is halfway decent to start. If it's not, then maybe you need to address one of those things right off the bat. But with anything else, with cycling is a great cardiovascular exercise. It does not improve knee strength or really address anything specific at the knee. It's great to move your knee. It's great to improve your knee endurance, but none of that exercise really focuses deeply on the quad strength of your knee. And so the quads, so you've got your quads on the front, hamstrings on the back. Those two are key for knee health. Okay. And the quads need a lot of attention, but the hamstring shouldn't be ignored, especially with meniscus issues, because that can play in. I've had plenty of people who have had meniscus tears that were diagnosed where if you give your body enough time to adapt, you can do pretty darn well. Will you be pain-free? No, I'm not pain-free. So I always say, you know, the pain scale is 0 to 10. Zero is 10% of that. So it's not always something where,
of course,
I'm not saying it's not going to bug you, but you can go ahead and give your body that stimulus to adapt and make it a little sore, recover, and see how it feels the next day and keep going along that program. If you successfully load your body in the way that it should be done, it can end up feeling pretty good in the long end. But again, it does sometimes take some time.
Yeah, definitely. It's is there any truth to, I'm not sure if it's a myth, but that it's harder to recover as you get older?
Sometimes it takes a little longer. Yeah. I mean, I've even noticed that with my own training that sometimes I'm like, oh my God, my knees are sore today. My knees weren't sore before. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, as you age, your recovery process does take a little longer. So the way that your cells adapt, the way that your body adapts, takes longer as you age. And so that's where ultimately sometimes as we age, we need to adapt training intensity a little bit. You know, should you hit full send on your workout 7 days a week and with no let up, no rest days when you get older? I mean, probably not. I mean, if you're okay with feeling like your body went through the, you know, tumble dry cycle and the, you know, washing machine, then by all means, knock yourself out. But if you give yourself the recovery time, then you're typically going to be pretty okay, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I'll say that, like, there's definitely like a delicate balance with like what you want to do and what you probably need for your stress relief, right? And the what your body can handle. Because I'll say I've got an exercise bike on the way because I'm like, okay, gyms aren't opening for a while, so I need one. And so, you know, I think I know that she uses the same exercise bike that I am getting, and so I'm like, okay, you know, some of this, it might be wise to take it a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if it's not something that you're used to, you know, let yourself test it out, you know, be nice to your body. We put our bodies through a lot. And so giving it a little self-care is never a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a friend, Katie, here in New York, who's got a slipped disc. So she's wondering if there's any way to get moving and to be able to get in shape when you've got such an injury.
Oh God. Yeah, absolutely. I see it every single day. You know, the disc is blamed for a lot. And so for those who don't know, you know, a slipped disc is technically the same as a herniated disc. Okay. It's way over blamed for injuries, to be completely honest with you. I get that referral a lot from physicians. Hmm. And there definitely are instances where a disc is causing the issue, but a lot of times that's not actually what's happening. But so say Katie has a slipped disc, and, you know, it probably means that she has low back pain. Probably means that, you know, she has low back pain. Maybe she's got pain going down her leg a little bit. And, you know, I'm just hypothesizing here,
but of course,
she can absolutely get moving. And that's the key, is that she needs to start moving however she can. And so the worst thing that you can do with back pain is to not move and to stay there and hope that it heals. Hmm. It might. Right. But then whenever it stops hurting, then you're going to have to teach your body how to move again. Whereas if you start off right off the bat, testing out some movements, working on maybe some control through your low back, you know, trying to bend, extend, you know, see where your limitations are and gradually work on them. I mean, for myself personally, and this can be transferred to the low back, I was doing some barbell movements earlier this year and brought the bar down too hard on the back of my neck and immediately felt my upper neck kind of tense up a little bit. I'm like, well, that was stupid.
Yeah.
And it didn't hurt then, but 2 days later when I was getting out of bed, I was, you know, turning like a robot because I, you know, overloaded myself too much. And so I started off that day doing different movements and, you know, focusing on the control and stability and mobility through my neck and subjecting it to that stress. And I mean, it took a week and a half to get better because, I mean, I was just moving fast and, you know, it was something I had done 100 times, but that individual instant was too much for my body to handle. And so it hurt. And so a lot of times with the low back, that's what happens, man, is that it's something that is built up over time. And if we go ahead and address some of those things and get moving, right? So if she can go for a walk and then go ahead and go do some, you know, if she has back stretches that she likes or, you know, working on some control exercises. Again, there's plenty of free resources online if she doesn't want to go see somebody. Obviously, if you've got a longstanding issue, I would suggest going to see a PT if you have those at your disposal or, you know, you have that capability. But if not, absolutely, movement is the biggest key. And that's where, if you move, your body's going to gradually start to feel better. And if you're moving and you find that it's not, then maybe it's time to at least go get a consultation with somebody who can point you in the right direction.
Sweet. Awesome. Thank you for that. And lastly, my friend Lisa out in Louisville, she actually just moved out there.
Lisa in Louisville.
Yeah, I know. Love the alliteration. She's wondering if you have any general tips around strengthening the knee. I think this is something I hear actually pretty often is people feeling some kind of joint discomfort or weakness in the knees. So any general as much as you can tips there?
Yeah. So for the knee, a lot of times what I'll do is myself, cause you know, I'll have some soreness in my knee sometimes, warm up first, you know, that's huge. How many times do we go and just, all right, I'm in my apartment, I'm going downstairs, I'm going to go jog 5 miles, you know, again, guilty. Maybe not of the 5 mile part, but probably more like maybe two or three, just cause I don't enjoy doing long distance running. Just my perspective is I have plenty of clients who do, but okay, if your knee hurts, let's warm up, you know, let's get your knee muscles working again, your quads, your hamstrings, your calves, your glutes are huge for your knee. So maybe you have a resistance band and you're doing some glute activation, you know, recruitment work, whatever you want to call it. Again, the exact terminology is not the important part. It's the movement that's important. And so I have people do, you know, side steps all the time. I have people do monster walks. I have people do, you know, single leg deadlifts. I have people do all these different things that prime their muscles for movement, you know, get a little bit of joint mobility, sit down in a squat, you know, do various different things to go ahead and move that joint, you know, get that joint and those muscles primed for movement. And then when you go ahead and hit your jog, I'd be willing to bet it feels a little better. It might not be pain-free, but it probably feels a little better. And then you do that gradually and allow yourself to recover, and you'd be amazed what your body can do.
Incredible. That's all for my social media questions. So Ryan, where can people find you online? How can they chat with you, work with you, et cetera?
Yeah. So my online stuff, Instagram and Facebook, is Dr. Ryan Cullen. It's just dr.ryancullen and last name is Cullen. So that's my personal account, you know, and putting out stuff on there. And in terms of working directly with me, if it's in the physical therapy clinic, we do telehealth if people want to ultimately reach out there. I'm with Benchmark Physical Therapy down in Charlotte, North Carolina. But outside of that, you know, if it's from more of a performance perspective, we did just launch Catalyze Performance, which is my own company, focused on a lot of the stuff that we talked about here today, quite frankly, and something that blossomed out of, you know, a desire to get more on the preventative side of medicine in graduate school, and then spending the first few years in the clinic and realizing that I was getting people better and didn't always have somewhere to send them to and have that next, you know, phase, or, you know, having a buddy who says, hey, you know, I want to be able to squat better. I'm like, cool, you know, and sent them to some free website that, you know, half the people don't ever look at or use. You know, we created Catalyze Performance to help people get to that next level, whatever that next level is for them. And so that company is catalyzeperformance.com, and then also on Instagram and Facebook at Catalyze Performance. So that's myself and my business partner, Joe Vallejo, who also went to Oneana with us in the day. So keeping the Oneana and Upstate crew together.
Yeah, definitely, man. Do you work with people digitally?
Yeah. So one of the things that we are working on, it's hasn't officially launched yet, but is in the works for Catalyze, is doing a lot of things digitally. So especially with COVID and everything going on, you know, this is an idea that we had in the works prior to this, but it's, I think, even more beneficial now, is that we're going to have an exercise library on the website. And so we have over 200 videos locked and loaded, and ready to go once we get that up and running. The website is live now. The exercise library is not quite yet. There's some information on the website. Ultimately, we'll have some free blog posts and content and stuff to put out. But the exercise library will be something that will likely be like a membership-based kind of thing. And then ultimately, working digitally, we're planning on having different options where people can have video check-ins with us. People can have, you know, remote programming, online coaching, sort of setup where some of these different things that people have questions with, right? So yeah. Lisa in Louisville, or I think it was it Lisa out in LA? If I'm getting those names mistaken, then forgive me, but it's something where those folks could reach out and say, hey, I want to improve my ability to run. I want to improve my ability to squat or do these different things. And we can facilitate, you know, improving your knee strength, improving your knee performance and all that stuff. Obviously, if it's physical therapy based, then, you know, we'll refer to a physical therapist nearby you or see it ourselves in the clinic for our individual companies. But the performance side of things is that's kind of where it was birthed out of and has really kind of blossomed.
Sweet. Amazing, man. Well, go check Ryan out. Dude, we have both come a very, very long way.
It's crazy, man. I honestly, and you know, for your listeners, Rich is going about it the right way. You know, follow the stuff that he's doing. He's taking all the right steps in terms of, you know, his own health. And everybody always wants a quick fix. And Rich is somebody who's done it the right way, taking those small daily habits and seeing it come to fruition. And so it's been awesome to watch his journey and I can't wait to continue to watch you along the way.
Oh, dude, thank you so much. Hope to chat more soon.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you for this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Well, that's all for this week's episode. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Bodega Body Podcast. Go follow me at Rich Sabata on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow at Bodega Body on both Twitter and Instagram. And for tips and tricks on how to get started with your physical journey, I've put together many different exercise guides. I just put together a yoga 101 guide, and I've got many more guides, including how to kick your sugar addiction, why chocolate's so addicting, and many other nutrition tips as well. So go check out bodegabody.com. I also want to give a special shout out to a really good friend of mine, David James, whose intro you heard at the very top of this episode. I'll be using his music from now on for both the intros and outros. Just look up David James. That's a $ for the S on Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple Music. Thanks, David. Take care, all. See you next week. Yeah, these side streets cold, you gon' need you. Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. Said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. I feel like a precious pebble lodged under the sea. Since I was 8, I knew a 9 to 5 wasn't for me. Shit ain't always how you want it to be. That's why I gotta work hard. My ancestors had to run to be free. At 15, I was running the streets, drinking liquor, puffing the greets, cutting from school, fucking with freaks. By 21, I was sunk in the seat. G-Ride, bumping some beats, probably looking for something to eat. During my childhood, nothing was sweet. I wore ponies to school. The mother niggas had ups on their feet. It never fazed me though. I knew I was more intelligent, and the gift I had made it even more relevant. When I rap, I touch many like a known therapist, cause I'm packed with more passion than a gold medalist. I say something, they gon' jack it, nigga, no letterman. I can pop at any time, shit, there's no telling it. Okay, none of y'all niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride. Said all my niggas gon' ride. Niggas say nicely lied, must be fried. Know where I'm going, nigga, I don't need a god. Married to this money, baby, I don't need a bride.